we teach ourselves to walk. Yes, I was influenced by my parents and other people. Yes, I give them credit for that, and ancestors beyond them and people in the community where I live right now. But ultimately, I have to make the decision. I have to put in the work of being who I am. But when I am in touch with who I am, just makes it so much easier to honor other people.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Today on In Good Faith, we are starting the first of what will be a few episodes, a little mini-series, if you will, on the love of God, both how people experience that personally, and then we're going to pull some highlights from some past guests who have shared some really insightful thoughts about that. We'll also have a chance to talk with a panel from three different faith traditions about how they experience God's love and what their denominations or their traditions teach. I'm so happy to be in studio today with senior producer Heather Bigley. Welcome, Heather.
Hello.
And also with producer Leah King.
Hello. Glad to be back.
So many faiths talk about the primacy of God's love. In the Christian tradition, there's the great commandments of to love God with heart, might, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And if you go through all of the different faiths in the world, there is something about how we treat our neighbor, how we love each other. So I thought it would be really good to dig into both what it's like to love God, to receive love from God, and what it's like to love your neighbor, and maybe even a little bit of how to love yourself if we haven't had that experience. We have the Reverend Dr. David N. Moore, Jr. He is a pastor, a theologian, a human rights advocate, adjunct university professor, and a writer living in Santa Barbara. And he leads Santa Barbara's Beloved Community Church, also Jesus Collective, an online community which exists to foster wholeness and equity by healing relationships and cultural divides.
Yeah, I like what he says about the love of God and the way that he has interpreted it in his own life. And I think that I struggle with that. And listening to this interview really helped me understand if it's good, it comes from God.
He's also the co-host of a religious podcast,
which we can't say the name of, folks.
Or we need to bleep it.
There will be some bleeping here, but known it's said with an earnest desire to know more, I think.
Absolutely.
I think the story out of which the title comes reflects someone who is aching to know God. And I was really touched by that story that he tells about the title.
I started off with that very first question about how we experience God's love.
I recently learned a new way of articulating a way that I think, a way of being, but was an upgrade in the way that I say it. And that is actually, and I want to give credit to a Kabbalist by the name of Jason Shulman, who writes about God's love being manifest in every human and throughout all of creation, throughout the cosmos. And it's a matter of receiving what we already have, acknowledging a reality that is irresistible and harder to get away from than we might think.
That's really interesting, because if we already have it, why don't we know that? What keeps us from recognizing that?
I think that for the most part, my understanding is that whether a person is a person of a particular faith or not, that generally speaking, and I'm responding to my awareness of, you know, world religion, it might be, I think that the intentions of the founders, if that's an appropriate term, are noble and inclusive and spiritual, wanting to connect with the unseen, the transcendent, and to connect people with that in community. But what happens is that when it turns to dogma, then it gets stuck at a particular place geographically, it gets stuck in a particular period chronologically, and therefore it cannot be broadly relevant or timelessly relevant.
When you pastor, and if someone comes to you and says, I want to believe, or maybe I do believe God loves me, but how do I experience that? What would you tell them? How would you walk them through that?
You know, it's interesting. I had a conversation just a couple of days ago about how I came to the place where I having been oriented religiously and culturally to be homophobic. And as I processed, how did I come to a place where I was fully accepting and affirming of people who were different? What brought me to the place where I could not be prejudiced? And as I thought about it, yes, I had encounters. Yes, I had read. Yes, I studied a lot. But really, the answer to the question was, I taught myself. And what I mean by that, it's in the way that we learn to walk, you know, when we're little. We might see other people walking that provide some inspiration. Maybe somebody's on the other side of the room with their arms held out. But really, we teach ourselves how to walk. And I think that as I practiced my faith and as I practiced meditation, I became closer, more aware of my true self. And my true self accepts all humans and feels no need to change them. And because of that, I taught myself to be loving. And I think that people, if they're in touch with their true selves and they're not intimidated by any ideas or dogma or anything like that, when they come in contact with their true selves, then they open up and love is just everywhere. You know, like the Dalai Lama says, my religion is love. So it doesn't mean we necessarily abandon the language and the models of our particular faiths, but we're not beholden to them to the extent that we feel like the exclusivity should cause us to not accept somebody else and their orientation in life.
Yeah. You talk about having traveled extensively and seeing the divine in people. What does that look like to you or feel like to you? How do you experience that when you observe that in someone?
Mostly it's being humbled by hospitality. You know, I had a conversation with one person once who was stunned that I said, I love people everywhere, no matter what their country is. And she was a little bit put back by that. And then her friend said, he didn't say he loved their governments. he had to clarify that for her. Yeah, uh-huh. It's not that I love all these governments, but I do love people.
You know, we hear about the two great commandments of the first to love God and then to love our neighbors as ourselves. And I wonder if we could talk a little bit about that first as ourselves. What does that mean to love yourself? I mean, I suppose some people could say, no, love God, love your neighbor, and you know, don't worry about that. That might be self-aggrandizing in some way, but it seems like if that's the way Jesus put it, love your neighbor as yourself, there must be something to that that we're supposed to understand or experience.
Oh, I think, Steve, that goes back to the model that we teach ourselves to walk. Yes, I was influenced by my parents and other people. Yes, I give them credit for that, and ancestors beyond them and people in the community where I live right now. I've been so beautifully enhanced by people who live here. But ultimately, I have to make the decision. I have to put in the work of being who I am. For me, a lot of that has to do with meditation and prayer. But when I am in touch with who I am, it just makes it so much easier to honor other people.
It seems so painful to think of someone going through life thinking that God hates them. Where do we get that idea? And how can we stop teaching that, even if it's that's not the intention to teach it, in congregations, for instance?
Yeah. I think dogma plays a big role in this, because people, when they don't accept themselves because they're trying to measure up to some kind of doctrine, some kind of cultural expectation, then what happens is people think that God hates them when really they're hating themselves for not measuring up, and they're hating their community, their family, people around them, a system of belief and practice that they were oriented to. And so they interpret that to be God, when in fact, it's the opposite of God. It's the opposite of what divinity is. It's not divine at all. One day, a few years ago, we had a gentleman who at that time did audiovisual stuff at our church. And I knew that he came from a family that was very anti-religious. And you know, I understood the reasons why. He was actually adopted. He was from Guam. And mm-hmm. as a child, he was adopted by a white family, but the community was not embracing to them. And one day, they woke up to a cross burning on their lawn, and they lived in a very rigid Christian community. So religion didn't appeal to them at all. But then he was coming to our church, and contributing in important ways. And so, you know, we were having coffee, Brian and I said, Brian, why is it that you keep coming? And I know your family, that's not the way that you came up. And he said, well, I just needed to find a place where God was not an a-hole. And I had never said that word in my life before, but it took on tremendous meaning for me coming from him and his experience. It stayed with me for a few years. And whenever I would mention that phrase, people would light up. People would say, oh, I would listen to a podcast like that, or I would read a book with that title. Oh, I want my mom, or I want my brother, or my cousin, or my neighbor, or whatever, to hear more about this. I found that there was some kind of power in it, and I can't take credit for its origins. I'm glad that I didn't let go of it, or I wasn't offended by it or anything like that.
I wonder if you talk to me about the faith aspect of the home you grew up in. What were you taught, and when did you experience something that you called God? When did you become aware of that?
I have memorable experiences of divine encounters as a child, but they competed dogma. They competed with religious ideas. So it was almost like my parents or the community that I was a part of gave me both the best food I could taste and eat, and also a few items in there that might make you want to gag. And because of my lack of capacity to discern, to differentiate, I took it all and then at some point began to lump it all together, saying, well, I don't want to eat any of that. My parents grew up in the Jim Crow South in North Carolina. They both, from different cities and churches, were African Methodist Episcopal, AME, which is the first religious tradition founded in North America that is apart from those that were grounded in Europe. And it was a resistance movement because of the earliest proponents were racist. It started in Philadelphia, a place that some would call more progressive, in the Methodist Church, which was abolitionist. However, they did not see their African brothers and sisters as full equals. And so that created some problems. And so my parents actually grew up, you know, obviously centuries later, but in that tradition. But then when they left the Jim Crow South and they lived in New Mexico for a while, they actually started attending, first my mom, then my dad, a Black Pentecostal church specifically. And so when I was born into that tradition. And so I could say that my grandparent tradition is AME, African Methodist Episcopal, but my parental tradition is Pentecostal, something specifically known as the Church of God in Christ. I think I've got bits and pieces of all of that, but more of the parental expression of Christian faith.
What was it that you experienced as a child that you felt was a connection with the divine?
Well, I think I experienced a very prayerful home. My mom especially, but my dad was Navy, so he was gone more. But when he was around, he had a very prayerful life as well. And they would invite their friends over who seemed like they were ancient to me, but I mean, they were in their early 20s. And they created this atmosphere in prayer that I knew was something authentic because it came from the deepest part of them. Their prayer was visceral. And, you know, whether it was my mom by herself, who every morning started her day on her knees in bed with her blanket over her and the spread over her. I remember, uh-huh. You know, I have that image in my head. Or whether there was a group of people. These were very visceral prayers. They were not scripted, and believe me, I'm in favor of scripted prayers too. At this point in my life, I benefit from them. But there was something atmospheric in the way that my parents prayed and the way that they lived. And so it was easy for me at some point to just really buy into that.
And at some point, you probably, I'm guessing, had to decide, this is what I've been taught, do I believe in a divine being? In God, and does that God have a connection with me?
I doubt that I ever at any point renounced the tradition of of my parents, but I did become quite dissatisfied with it because maybe some people would call legalism. There were a lot of cultural constraints. Again, my parents came from the Jim Crow South, and here we were living, growing up in California. And essentially, this is true for most Black congregations of the period, and to some extent, even now. They're colonies of the South because of the Great Migration, where millions of Black people left Florida, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, and moved to what we would call the North, but in our case, it was Southern California and Northern California for a while. And so these churches were communities of the people who left those other places. And so their culture, their tradition, they brought with them. And so here I was growing up, and you know, my story is not uncommon for people of my generation. They might say they love God, but all of the images, the preaching illustrations and all of that stuff were agrarian because, you know, these were people who picked cotton and tobacco. Yeah. And so they came to these other cities and the preachers and the communities were very different from the way we were growing up.
Interesting. It seems like you may have had practice in learning to love other people from all the way from experiencing some racism at the hands of a kindergarten teacher, for instance, and other childhood encounters. Does God's love get you through that? Or did that teach you something that helped you be open to other people experiencing some sort of marginalization?
You know, I was not verbal as a child. So the experience that you just referenced in kindergarten, and really most of the way through school, my parents didn't know about. They grew up in a world where all the teachers in the schools were Black. But the thing is that I didn't talk about it. These experiences, a lot of this is the way that my parents were. We lived in a barrio, and our neighbors were mostly Latina and Latino. And I just have crisp memories of my mom standing over at the fence with our neighbor, Mrs. Villaseñor, and them having conversations for half an hour, 45 minutes, and they didn't know each other's language. But this kind of set the tone for the way that I open up, and all of my siblings, the way that we open up to people, the tone was set by our parents. You know, there was a couple that lived across the street from us when we lived in San Francisco, and I was about 5 years old. And there was a white guy who was married to a Japanese woman. And this is not that long after World War II, you know, it's like 1960, and a lot of hostility towards Asians. And I can remember when this woman would be in our living room crying, her head on my mom's lap or on her shoulder. And on one occasion, my mom actually went over to her house. She went in and found that she had cut her wrist. She had tried to commit suicide. Mm. My mom saved her life. So this kind of assertive love, even in the face of rejection, almost a naive love that we were brought up with, kind of flows out of myself and my siblings.
Well, that's a beautiful thing to have absorbed from your mother. So you see benefits definitely to interfaith interactions, it sounds like.
I think faith is part of culture in a lot of ways. And we're more open to eating Thai and Mexican and Chinese foods, but we're really selling ourselves short when we don't engage more deeply in relationship and the histories and stories of people.
You're listening to In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here, host of In Good Faith. Here's another podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts I hope you'll check out. What I love is real. You know that saying, real recognize real? That's Lisa on The Lisa Show. Lisa Valentine Clark is a comedian, she's a believer, a single mother, and on The Lisa Show podcast, you'll hear from the Council of Moms, a genius idea which is actually one of my favorite parts of her show, and you'll hear about the challenges of life, parenting, mental health questions, social issues. Yes, you'll hear from experts, but also from people discussing their where the rubber meets the road life experience. It's The Lisa Show, wherever you get your podcasts. And now more on In Good Faith with Reverend Dr. David N. Moore, Jr., about God's love. how you perceive answers or direction to when you're seeking or you're praying for something. How does the Lord speak to you? Or how do you hear the Lord? Maybe that's the other end of that equation. How do you hear God?
How do I hear God? You know what? One of the things I discovered is God sounds like me, but God doesn't sound like me to you. I think God uses our conscience, our identity, our uniqueness. And if I'm really being me, then I will have no problem listening to myself, and that will be the divine working in me. But listen, I tell my kids this, and I told them just this past week, and I hope you tell yourself that you're an amazing person or you're a wonderful person. And I will also say, but it doesn't mean nearly as much when I say it. But when you can say it to yourself, that's when it takes on life. And so we have to affirm ourselves, and that's what God wants for us.
You know, I have this image when you say that of God delighting in us discovering and using the gifts that He gave us, that He put there, which I think is what you're talking about, being our true selves. Yeah, that's very energizing. I love hearing about that.
You know, I've said that to people before. I've said, hey, you know, I hope you know that you're a wonderful person, and I hope you tell yourself that. And they, you know, and there's this kind of drawing back. Oh, wait, no, I could never say that to myself. And I said, well, you're going to miss something until you tell yourself that, because there's nobody who knows you like you do, and you know, who has as much at stake as you do. So you've got to begin to value your own opinion.
You're a pastor. You're a podcaster. You've written a book. You seem to be, to me, a man on a mission. And I'm wondering if you can talk to me about your sense of what drives you, or do you feel led by God to do these things, or is this your natural response to who you are?
I think it's both. I think it's a natural response as I encounter who I am, but I believe that I'm energized by the divine. I think that God sustains me and gives me counsel, but I am committed to the exploited, to the dispossessed, to the colonized, to the abused. And one of the things that I've been doing for the past couple of years is working with a national organization called Hand in Hand, which advocates for home care workers, for everybody from domestic workers, from nannies to elder care workers, people who support persons with disabilities, because particularly here in California, they do not get the respect. I'm not saying that the people they work for don't respect them. I'm talking systemically. There's no sick leave for them. There are no protections that people have on when they work other kinds of jobs. And it's really ironic, because other people, in many cases, could not have their jobs if it weren't for these people. I was attracted to this organization and met some wonderful people. And 2 months ago, we were in Sacramento, the state capital, at the governor's office. And we were challenging him to sign legislation that would spread the benefits that other people have in their workplaces.
Well, I love that. I've taken a bunch of really, I think, intriguing notes as we've spoken. And I was going to say walking away from this with the whole idea of when you said, we learn to walk, we teach ourselves to walk. And I wrote down, we see it happening. Other people are doing it. We try it. We probably fail. But there's something we want to get to, or a place we want to get to, or a person, whatever it is. I like that spiritually there is a way, with God's help, teach ourselves the things that we need to know. That's very impressive to me.
How many times have we watched a toddler miss the corner of a table by centimeters?
Yeah, just this last week at a family dinner. Yep.
Okay. It's just the most amazing thing. I think that walking is divine. Learning to walk is divine.
That was Reverend Dr. David N. Moore Jr., the leader of Santa Barbara's beloved community church and also the Jesus Collective. This is a person who comes from such a rich history, such a rich family history, and is really thoughtful about what he's accepted and what he's not accepted in his own tradition, an experience we all go through. And then yet still tying that really closely to how he feels about God, who God is in his life. And I think he said some unexpected things. What do you guys think?
I was unexpectedly hit by the simplicity of several comments. One is that we are learning in receiving the love of God to receive what we already have. That was my first follow-up was, so why don't we recognize it? And we just complicate it so much as human beings. And the image that he used about a baby learning to walk is, we sort of teach ourselves how to do that, but we see other people walking and it occurs to us, maybe I should try it. It might not even be conscious. It's just like, that's what we do. And the idea that we could learn to recognize the love of God from other people experiencing the love of God, it seems pretty simple to me.
I love that analogy too, because when you think of a toddler learning to walk, they're very heavy-footed and they don't have very good balance. And so he talks about this idea that we kind of relearn how to walk and we relearn how to think about theology and what connects with us as we grow older. Like, we don't still walk like toddlers. And I think that's a cool extension of the metaphor.
I have to admit, the whole reason I wanted to have David on the show was because of the title of his podcast. And
that we can't say.
That we can't say. And I'm sorry if I've revealed too much about myself. But for me, when I've heard people talk about God, there have been times when I've said, that's not the God I know and love. The God I know and love is over here doing this, working in this way in people's lives. And so maybe I'm not going to be saying that podcast title, but I really empathize with the spirit behind that podcast title.
And he says that to him, God sounds like him, which means that God's using our own conscience, our own sort of that voice in our head that we're used to. But maybe it's not so much that we say, well, that sounds like me, I can't believe that, but that we might say, that sounds like me. Is that God working in me?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So we are talking in the next several episodes about the love of God, both the love we feel for and from God, as well as how we share that with other people. So I hope you'll stay with us on this journey for a couple of episodes. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team includes Leah King, Katarina Martinich, Josh Orton, and Ashton Rowan. Our post-production sound engineers are Mark Hansen, Brandon Lewis, Daniel Phillips, and Carly Wilson. Here at In Good Faith, we're committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Help spread the word by leaving a comment or a review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter at In Good Faith Pod. Instagram and Facebook are In Good Faith Podcast. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.